Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org and the studios of WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck, our series of live performances and interviews. I'm John Schaefer. Brandi Younger has established herself as one of the leading harpists of our time, and she's done that by traveling way beyond the usual confines of the instrument. She's become a familiar name on the jazz scene, but if you listen to her new album, Brand New Life, you'll also hear echoes of R&B, hip-hop, and mid-20th century pop. Brandi Younger is here, and she's going to play some of her own music for the harp. But first, here she is playing a version of the familiar American hymn, Lift Every Voice and Sing.
Thank you.
That is Brandi Younger, live here in our studio with her performance of Lift Every Voice and Sing. Interesting piece of trivia about that piece, Brandi. 1939 World's Fair, the organizers, you know, do you know this story?
Augusta Savage?
Augusta Savage, the sculptor?
Yes.
So, well, then you tell the story.
Well, she created this really epic sculpture called Lift Every Voice, and it's called The Harp. It consisted of black men in the shape of a harp. And it was huge. It was like 16 feet or something.
I don't know. It was destroyed at the end of the...
It was massive, and they destroyed it at the end of the fair.
As they did with all... because they were temporary. They were.
But like...
I know.
But luckily, they did sell smaller versions of it, so some of those are still in existence today. Thank goodness.
And she was the only black woman commissioned to do an art project for that 1939 World's Fair.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the fact that there was one was pretty impressive for 1939.
And the fact that she chose a harp.
Yeah, right. So she called it Lift Every Voice and Sing, but everybody else called it The Harp. So, yeah, I guess I'm not surprised that that not such a piece of trivia then. So, Brand New Life is your brand new album, and it is at least in part a tribute to one of the great jazz harpists who came before you, namely Dorothy Ashby. And, you know, we were talking a little bit before the show, and, you know, Alice Coltrane at least has some name recognition, but for folks who don't know Dorothy Ashby, give us a little thumbnail sketch of what she means to you, who she was to you.
Oh, whew. Well, she had 11 albums as a leader, right? And she's like leading her own band. She had a theater company in Detroit called the Ashby Players. She had a radio station where she was the host in Detroit.
Wow.
And then
this is like the 60s?
Yep, 50s, 60s. Yeah,
early 70s.
But then she moved to LA to really break in on the recording scene, where she ended up on so many records. All the classic recordings of the 70s that you know of, that harp, it's her. It's her. I mean, she was just dynamic.
And like you, in her own music, she wove in all of the sounds of the day. You know, in retrospect, we consider her a kind of spiritual jazz player, you know, along the lines of an Alice Coltrane or a Pharoah Sanders, people like that. But man, if you listen to like the rubaiyat of Dorothy Ashby, you know, she's got, there's like some light funk, and she's clearly heard soul and pop music and stuff. So it seems like you might have sensed a kindred spirit there.
For sure. You know, as a kid growing up, I always wanted to play what I heard on the radio. I wanted to play what was popular. And that's essentially what she was doing. Of course, by the time I came to her music, I was like, that's old music. But it was so current, like windmills. That was the Thomas Crown Affair. That was like popular. When she recorded it, everyone else was recording it. Little Sunflower, Freddie Hubbard. That was popular, you know? We see it as a standard now, but she was playing the music of her time and not locked into a genre either.
It's funny because, you know, obviously you do windmills on this new record, and I guess for you it is a standard at this point because that's like half a century old.
Now it's a standard, yeah.
There is a track on this record that is a Dorothy Ashby tune, but that no one has ever heard before. Where did you find it?
There's actually a few on there.
Really?
Yeah. Well, actually, one, there is an obscure recording of it, Double Talkin'. That's entitled Running Game on my record. But that one, there is an obscure version. But what's super cool is that she's playing piano.
Yeah. Oh, and she also plays the koto, Japanese
on record,
zither
yeah.
on some of her...
She really was way ahead of her time, and the world was absolutely not ready for her. That's all that happened. The world just was not ready.
Yeah. You're a girl for one man only. So a previously unreleased Dorothy Ashby tune.
Yep, that was one of the pieces from her theater company, the Ashby Players, one of the songs. She wrote all the music for it. Thank you. there are a lot of things that are in the can. I don't know exactly what, but that some of the labels have, you know, that were never released. Wow. Like things like an octet record, maybe a nonet, you know, there are recordings that...
All right, well, at least we get to hear a version of You're a Girl on the album Brand New Life. You also do a version of Dust, which is one of the tracks from the Rubaiyat of Dorothy Ashby. And, you know, you have put together a pretty... a murderer's row, if I can use an old baseball term. you know, I mean... Michelle Indigiocello singing, Jeff Parker sitting in on guitar, to say nothing of the usual Micaiah McRaven on drums and Rashawn Carter on bass. Joel Ross sits in on a couple of tracks on Vibes. So really just a tremendous group of musicians surrounding you.
Not too shabby.
Not too shabby
Not
at all.
Not too shabby.
But what's interesting about Dust is that you've given it kind of a little bit of a Caribbean kind of reggae tinge.
Totally. So let me tell you. I actually heard a rehearsal recording of her playing Dust. And that is what inspired me to do it, because the recording actually sounded different than what's on the record.
Yeah.
And it wasn't her singing in the rehearsal. I don't know if it was Maxine Dixon or what, but there was another singer singing in the rehearsal. And I listened to it and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is... It just opened up in a different way for my ears. How it is on the album is very clean,
yeah,
very refined. I was into the grit of that rehearsal recording, like seriously. So when we did it and we recorded the track, at this time I didn't know that Michelle would say yes, you know?
Yeah.
So I said, well, you know, I don't want to reproduce what's there already. Let's play around with it. Ended up being a reggae track.
Okay.
And when I asked Michelle and the answer was yes, I was like, I had a lot of those moments.
There was the veil through which I could not see. Some little talk a while of me and thee. There was no more me and thee. I make the most of what we had to spend before we do.
It's really, really deep, you know, when you...
There's something very astral.
Yeah.
The title is Dust, but
Dust.
There's something very cosmic about...
Dust to Dust, yeah.
Yeah. So the album is this kind of tribute. Are you hoping that this sends people back to Dorothy Ashby's stuff?
I do hope that people, not just Dorothy Ashby, but harp.
Yeah.
Just kind of knowing that it existed in this other context than how you're used to hearing it or how you expect to hear it. That it exists and it has been happening.
Yeah.
And everyone's just asleep.
Harpist Brandy Younger is my guest. Her new album's called Brand New Life. Brandy, this next piece you're going to do, this goes back a few years.
Okay, you did your homework.
Well, Essence of Ruby, this is, which you recorded with your quartet.
At least. So we recorded this, I had an album called Wax and Wayne that was a studio record, but it's also on the live version with the quartet. But we did this originally, I think it was bass, harp, drums, guitar,
yeah,
flute, and saxophone, tenor sax. It was a lot. And then trying to condense this to a solo harp situation, I'm struggling over here. But my intentions are the best.
All right. Well, you know, the live version, which is the one I know, has a, you know, definite kind of funk flavor to it. Let's see what you can do with a solo harp version of Essence of Ruby. It's a live performance from Brandy Younger. Thank you. That is Brandi Younger with a live solo version of her piece Essence of Ruby. It's just so interesting to think of the harp. You know, you have those long bass strings and they're very resonant. And when you want that funk sound, you don't want the resonance, right? You want that short, slappy bass sound. So it's a real kind of challenge for you.
You're fighting, yeah.
Now, I want to come back to something you said earlier, which was, you know, like most kids, when you were a kid, you wanted to play the music you heard on the radio. Most people who want to play the things they hear on the radio gravitate towards the instruments they hear on the radio, the guitar, the piano. How did you end up with the harp?
I know it's random, but there was a woman at my dad's job who played harp, and my parents were like, oh, our daughter's musical. Can we bring her over to your house? I played the flute. So we did little flute and harp duets.
Huh.
But then she said, oh, if she learns harp, she could probably get a scholarship. And, you know, parents.
Oh, yeah.
That's
oh,
the
yeah.
only word they care about.
And did it work?
It worked.
Very nice. So yeah, you did all the classics, and at what point did you think, I don't just want to do what I hear on the radio, I can do these things on this instrument?
I was always, so when I was a kid, I kind of negotiated with my teacher. She's wonderful. Her name is Karen Strauss. And I would learn what she gave me, but then I would also show up with like cassettes. Oh boy, I sound old. CDs, recordings of the stuff I wanted to play. So as long as I learned what was in my method book,
right,
she would also write lead sheets out for these pop tunes.
Like, so, come on, name some names.
Well, some people have been canceled since, but Toni Braxton.
Okay.
Maxwell.
Okay.
Babyface. Mm-hmm. Like, if it was on the, you know, if I'm listening to it on, you know, whatever the stations were, I wanted to do it. So I also kind of led a double life as a result, because I'm doing the harp ensemble stuff and the traditional stuff, but then at home I'm doing what I want to do. But also my parents, my mom's like, could you play something people know? You know? So I was always sort of like, you get this little, the pushback at home, like, what you're doing is fine, but people want to hear something that they know and that they can relate to. And even though it was annoying at the time, because, you know, no one wants to hear mom nagging, maybe she was right. She was right. She was right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was always doing it, but I wasn't doing it really out loud. You know, when I was in high school, Omega Psi Phi fraternity, they would have this talent show every year, and I'm like playing Stevie Wonder, Ribbon in the Sky. You know, I was mm-hmm. doing the, I knew the audience. I knew my audience.
Right.
You know?
Well, and if you're going to bring Dorothy Ashby's music to a 21st century audience, sometimes it helps to do it in a 21st century way. And so you got Pete Rock to guest on your version of Living and Loving in My Own Way, which is, it's just so, the weirdest thing about this is how well it works.
I love Pete Rock. I mean, that was one of the ways that I discovered Dorothy Ashby. I'm a New Yorker. I'm listening to hip hop, you know? Didn't know I was listening to Dorothy Ashby, listening to the tracks, you know? But I was like, what if I could get Pete Rock on a track? And it took some arm twisting. But when I got a yes, I may have done a little backflip, hurt my back, you know? And we weren't exactly sure how it could fit, but when we recorded it, you know, Micaiah did enough with the percussion, with the drums, mm-hmm. for, you know, to send the stems over, and like, you can utilize these elements and then do as you wish.
Right. And of course, Micaiah began as a beat producer, so he's comfortable with that idea.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's a drummer, but he also does, you know, make the beat. So yeah. It worked out. It's my mom's favorite.
The album's called Brand New Life. In addition to Pete Rock, Mumu Fresh makes an appearance on the title track. And so were these just names that you had in your back pocket? Did you always
nope,
wanted?
Nope, I can explain. I absolutely wanted folks that had shared a kinship with Dorothy Ashby. So that is why I reached out to Pete Rock. That is why I reached out to Ninth Wonder. And I knew that Michelle Indigocello was a diehard Ashby fan, right? So this is all intentional.
Yeah.
But in the studio, we recorded Brand New Life, which didn't have a name. It was original number two. It's like an R&B track.
Yeah.
And we're like, what are we going to do with this? You know, like, what are we going to do with this track? So I shared it with the great producer, Salam Remy. And I said, who can create some smooth backgrounds, but a really soulful lead. Like, I need this combination of smooth and soulful. And he said, Mumu Fresh.
This love is so deep. Time
Salaam Remy. He was Amy Winehouse?
Yes.
He was Amy Winehouse.
Yes.
Yeah. Very different kind of backstory to this next live piece you're going to do for us, which is Unrest.
Yes.
Part one. Now, this was a two-part single that,
yes,
that you released, was it last year? It was definitely in the wake of the George Floyd,
yes,
murder. And hence the title of the piece.
Yeah.
It's instrumental music. So there's always that question of, you know, the intention behind the music and getting that across to people. How do you do that?
So the one thing that people don't know, you know, we can get many sounds on the harp,
mm-hmm,
but there's a place that's not pleasant, and that's when notes are together in the bottom register.
Mm.
You get this gritty, and it's not comfortable to play, and it's not really comfortable to listen to. So I start the piece down in the most uncomfortable section, but then it goes to more of an improvisational section and a lament section, sort of reflection.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes back into that discomfort. And, you know, where I live uptown, this week could see the protests coming down the street. And it was a dark time also. You know, they had the mobile morgues in Central Park. So I'm, yeah, at the top of Central Park. There's just ambulances coming down the street. It's just like the most uncomfortable, you know. So this piece is not intended to be comfy.
Right. All right. Well, let's hear Unrest, Part 1. This is the solo harp part of the piece from my guest, Brandi Younger. Thank you. That is Brandi Younger with Unrest, the first part of a two-part piece that she released early last year and played live here in our studio. The harp is, you know, it's a lot more versatile, I guess, than people who are not harpists would think. So, you know, you're exploring that kind of gritty, darker bottom end of the instrument. There've got to be like extended techniques that you pull out every now and again for the instrument too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like what? I mean,
like this little thingy, we do this. You know, you get this little, this is called like xylo effect. And then there's this.
Whoa, what was that?
It's a pedal slide with the wire specifically that makes it.
So that's your foot on the pedal of the harp as the string is.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not very nice. And then sometimes people will weave paper through.
Right.
So you get that cool sound.
That prepared
paper.
Piano thing mm-hmm. on the harp.
And yeah. then playing near the board gives you a twangy guitar-like sound. Less resonant.
Right.
Yeah, and harmonics, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
As any guitarist will know. it's funny. Many people, I'm sure, are listening on headphones, and if you've been listening very carefully to Brandi's voice, you may have noticed that at moments she has a weird kind of haze of reverb or echo behind her. That is the soundboard of the harp, because you're so close to it. I mean, it is a very...
Oh.
So do you still play your Ravel and your Debussy and...
Yeah, so I'm trying, especially, you know, I'm teaching at the schools at NYU and at the New School, and I think it's important to, you know, do more than the standard. So last year I did play William Grant Still's Anenga, that concerto with the orchestra, because it's not the run-of-the-mill,
yeah.
you know. But yeah, from time to time, I catch myself still playing the regulars.
Okay.
But I've been learning some Florence Price arrangements, just trying to... I'm trying to step out as much as I can from all of the standard rep,
right.
trying to add to it.
Well, it's amazing how quickly Florence Price is becoming standard rep. And for folks who don't know, extraordinary black woman composer in the 1930s, first black female to have a piece premiered by a major orchestra, and then all the scores go missing. And it wasn't until somebody was renovating a house, was it in Illinois, I think?
Was, I don't remember.
And suddenly all these missing pieces, and then people are rediscovering, this woman was a pretty major composer.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
So I don't think she wrote for harp, though. So what are you, are you taking piano pieces?
Yeah, so Dr. Mallory McHenry at the University of North Texas has arranged a bunch of her music for harp. So I've been putting that on solo programs, and, you know, I would have done it today. I didn't think. I don't know.
Oh, we'll get that next time then. For the moment, Brand New Life is the latest record from the harpist, composer, and arranger Brandi Younger. And it's been great fun having you here in the studio. Thank you so much, Brandi.
Thank you so much for having me. So much fun.
And behind the plexiglass, Irene Trudell, our technical director. Karen Havlick is our producer. Our video editor is Eric Weber. I'm John Schaefer. You can keep up on everything that we're doing on New Sounds by subscribing to our free newsletter. Just text New Sounds to 70101.